Welcome back to the town of Twin Peaks for another episode of
And Twin Peaks.
Ah, we got a real zoo crew going today, huh? It's 9:30 a.m.
This is your drive time Twin Peaks podcast.
Could you, what a better world.
Auga, auga.
Just the grossest man calling and being like, yeah, I was just wondering, do you think Audrey's hot? Yeah, buddy. Oh, let me think about that. We're going to need to get the professor in here to deduce whether or not Audrey Horne's a smoke show.
Hey, this is Tony from the Bronx. Longtime listener. I just wanted to say, I think the Black Lodge is more of a metaphor than an actual place that you can go.
Hey, this is Vinny from Yonkers. I heard Tony's call. I just wanted to say, people who talk like that, it's only because they know their soul would get annihilated if they went through the Black Lodge. Okay. I'm telling you, if it were me in that Black Lodge, soul comes out in one piece. All right. Thanks, guys. I'll take my answer off the air.
I'm just saying, if I was in the Black Lodge, it would have went down differently.
I can't wait to find out how it goes down in the Black Lodge. Feels like we're getting close this week.
Oh, man.
We're on episode 20 of season 2. Titled The Path to the Black Lodge.
It does seem like we're getting
okay. Well, when I say that, I'm realizing
it just feels like we're getting closer to the Black Lodge. Also, the title,
I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, Dan, did you like this episode,
Rob? I know this has been the season of going, it's so over, we're so back.
Yeah.
But we're so back.
We're so back.
We're so back this week. It feels like we're focusing in.
Yeah.
Even the beauty pageant has some stakes now.
Yep.
Right? Like, as dumb as Wyndham Earl's plan is, at least it's like a plan.
Yep.
You know whoever wins is who he's gonna kill.
Yep.
In no uncertain terms. All the like sort of like dancing around the Doc Hayward, Ben Horne stuff, mm-hmm. the shot we called several weeks ago.
Yep.
They finally admitted, oh my God, he admitted that's what's happening.
Yep.
Things are, rest in power. Billy Zane is off the board. Not that his character died. He just is no longer. He flew away.
Yeah. He literally flew away. He got in his single engine Cessna and he took off.
He had 8 hours of deflowering and then he flew off in his, yeah. He had a bit of Cessna himself.
Yeah. You know? Welcome to the deflower hour.
Oh boy. It really was. And what's so crazy is that line where Audrey tearfully says, I'm a virgin and I want you to make love to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shame on them. I guess when I say we're so back, I do also mean, and we've once again reduced Audrey to a sex object.
Sure.
That's what being back means, unfortunately.
That is kind of what it means. I think,
there's more to it.
I think there's a little bit more to it.
Of course.
Audrey and all of her stuff.
But you know what, Rob?
What?
Takes are our currency.
Mm-hmm.
And business is booming.
It's true.
Gotta keep them hot.
That's right,
real hot.
I got cha-cha. Yeah, we can't get these, let these takes go cold here. We gotta keep them hot.
Nothing makes a take go stale faster than nuance. no place for that here. Sweeping declarations.
Hell yeah.
Absolutes, Sith style. Right? Only a Sith does that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What are we, Sith? We're not Sith.
Well, on the weekend? It's the weekend, baby.
Uh-oh.
I can be a little Sith.
A Jedi in the streets and a Sith in the sheets.
Whoa.
Okay.
Pretty sick.
That has to be some sort of a t-shirt that you could get at a...
Yeah, for sure. Right? And they only sell it in 4XL. And for the listener, yes, I'm body shaming, but I'm also a big fat guy. So yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I can say that.
I can say that. I can say that mean thing. And I'm already feeling bad about it. It's got me all sweaty.
Yep.
Could also be that I'm a big fat guy. Oh, you know what else is making me sweat?
What?
Big cup of caffeine. You got a hot cup with you?
No, you know what? I just had a little espresso, and I think I'm thinking that maybe when we take the break in a little while that I might make myself another
espresso.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Italian Dale Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
Dale Cooperino. Dale Amente Cooperino.
Yeah. How do you say hot in Italian? It's not caliente, right? It's got to be close to that.
Caldo.
Is it caldo?
Caldo. I believe so. You want me to check?
Yeah. We don't have to check right now.
Hot in Italian. Caldo.
Molto bene, I caldo.
Oh,
mamma Annie, mia, molto bene, I caldo.
Annie, molto bella. Che bella, Annie. Oh. All right, well, that's Watto.
Annie.
Annie.
Oh, man. These morning episodes are very silly.
I'm telling you, I got all this pent-up energy from sleeping.
From being well-rested.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. 8 peaceful hours.
22 peaceful hours.
It's nice, too, because the dog inserts himself into the bed after I go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
So I can't move.
Yeah.
So I'm getting really restful sleep because I'm in one spot the whole time.
Right. You're not moving around. You're like, I can't move. So
I can't move.
Right.
I can't move.
It's more of it's almost a coma.
That's the weirdest thing. I had a dream that a really annoying dog was in my bed all night.
Oh, Dan. Let's talk about
enough about the black bed hog. Bert, let's talk about that Black Lodge.
Yeah. The opening of this episode. We're still at that gazebo. We found a dead metalhead in a pawn piece. A dead Raimi.
You could say it's a classic one of those.
Yeah, it's a classic one of those. Giant papier-mâché pawn piece with a dead metalhead roadie in it, of course.
I admire Wyndham Earle's sort of self, like he's so self-motivated.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Like he made a big chess piece.
Right.
He's got a lot of plates spinning and he still finds time to make a big chess piece.
Yeah. All right. Is Wyndham Earle winning you back?
No.
No.
Actually, I will say yes, a little bit.
I
think the flashback footage really sort of like helps quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's like it makes him more of, and I'm, you know, obviously I got Raimi on the brain because the brother Raimi is in this, but it's like an origin story for like a Green Goblin or a Dr. Octopus.
Sure.
You know, it's like you see him being a normal guy. Suddenly all the cartoon villainy has some like dimension to it.
Yeah.
Not much.
Not. Yeah. But
some.
But to see him as a normal person and having now spent like six episodes or whatever, just watching him be like cartoonishly villainous and dress up in all of the weirdest costumes. What is, honestly,
right. Like, if you're going to make me listen to him go, I know something they don't know, you owe me a little grounding.
Oh, yeah. Also, does he, you know, he lives in that cabin with Leo. Do you think he has like a separate cabin just for all of his costumes? Like a
he must, right?
And like a little vanity with the light bulbs all around it where he, you know, gets ready.
That's why he wants to go to the Black Lodge for the closet space.
Yeah, he's like, I heard
there's a walk-in closet.
Yeah, I heard it's a metaphysical place, so space is sort of infinite, which is right. Great for me because I have a lot of costumes that I need to store. Yeah,
because I've been wanting to get a cowboy ensemble, but I really don't have the space. I can barely close the lid on this trunk. This steamer trunk.
I had to go out. I had to buy this horse costume. Just
hoping
that I would find somebody else to take up the back end of it.
Thank God.
Leo.
Yeah, thank God I have a brain dead man slave.
Is this the one where Leo, he gets a hold of the buzzer?
Paper, the staple remover? Oh, no, is the buzzer is the paper the staple remover?
It might be, yeah.
Because he closes it and he gets electrocuted. Yeah. And I fully didn't understand why that was happening.
Yeah.
And now that you say this,
yeah,
I can check that item off my list of
Twin Peaks mysteries.
Yes. That was on the cover of TV Guide that week.
Right.
What the hell is going on with Leo and the staple remover?
What is that in his hand, and why does it zap him? Yeah. Was that this episode or last episode?
It was this episode.
Yeah. I like that because Leo's just like, I don't understand how this works. I don't understand that I'm wearing the shock collar and he isn't.
Yeah. And Wyndham Earl, so cruel. He's like, no, don't, please.
Oh, no.
No.
Zap. Oh, Leo, you're so idiot. Stupid.
And then he puts handcuffs on him.
You know, it is something that, like, in this show, you know, the first, like, all of season one, you're just like, Leo is the biggest piece of shit. And then, like, you know, Leo, he's in the wheelchair. And then when he comes back, he immediately attacks Shelley and all this. And you're like, such a piece of shit. And now that he's
goodbye,
like,
goodbye, wife.
Goodbye. Yeah. Goodbye, wife.
One of the funniest moments on the whole show.
Yeah. But now that he's like Wyndham Earl's like flunky in a shock collar, you almost feel bad for him. But then you're like, I don't know. I watch this and I'm like, I almost feel bad for him. But then I'm like, he was a huge piece of shit. He kind of deserves all of this.
Yeah, I suppose. But it's like, if he's, you're right, he did goodbye wife Shelley. But he's not even like mentally competent anymore.
No.
But he is still competent enough to want to kill his wife.
Yeah.
But also, when he sees that someone else is trying to kill his wife, he gets very upset.
Well, yeah, because he wants to do
that's
it.
That's his job. Yeah.
You can't say goodbye wife. She's my wife.
She's my wife to say goodbye to.
Right. So we start the episode at the gazebo, one dead metalhead. They talk to,
I don't think he has a name.
It's just, Heavy Metal Rhodey is the character name, but that's, Willie Garson, who, he's like, you know, he was on Sex and the City. He's been on like he's been in a million fucking things.
Dude, yes. Okay. I could not place him.
Yeah.
And it's because he's significantly younger and not wearing
baby.
Big glasses.
Right.
Yeah. Was he what's his deal? on Sex and the City, is he like Miranda's husband or something?
No, I think I'm not a Sex and the City guy, but I think he's like friends with one of them. He's like he's a gay character who's friends with Sarah Jessica Parker.
Okay.
I also, he has one of the funniest roles in Kingpin, the bowling movie, where he's in the beginning, the part where Woody Harrelson, he's like, you know, his life has already, you know, gone down the shitter, and he's got like a coffee or whatever, and this guy Willie Garson is like mugging his landlord, the woman, and then, you know, Woody Harrelson runs up, throws coffee in the guy's face, and makes him run off. But it's like all sort of a ploy to get in the good graces of the landlord. And then he's like, you know, whatever. Woody Harrelson is paying him money later on, and then the landlord comes in and he throws hot coffee in his face again, and he runs off. Just funny.
That's good. I'm looking. So rest in peace, Willie Garson, died in 2001.
Yep.
But his New York Times obituary says he was best known for his role as Carrie Bradshaw's closest male friend.
There you go.
It's such a, I know you got to be concise, right? It's journalism. You got to keep in as few words as possible, but that just feels like so nothing.
Closest male friend.
Closest male friend.
Well, she has a lot of friends on there.
Of course. Famously, she has three gal pals who she's closer with than anybody
right.
in the world.
And it's almost like the four of them have significantly different personalities and, you know, go about dating in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah. This is Vincenzo from Staten Island. I think each of the girls represents a different facet of womanhood. I don't think each of them is supposed to be a complete person, except for maybe Carrie. I'll take my answer on the air.
You know, this is, yeah, it represents, you know, women, the idea that, you know, anyone could really have it all. You could be.
Yeah. you can only have one haircut.
You can only have one thing. And you have to have three other friends that do one thing also.
That's also like a funny feature of TV up until basically like 20 years ago, is that like if you had a group of women, they all had to like represent every possible hair color that women can have. Yeah. I say women, but I guess I mean people.
Sure.
But yeah, you had to have like a brunette, a redhead, a blonde. And then if you had a fourth, like jet black.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's obviously it's an unfortunate sort of thing, but usually in those situations, it's like, right, the brunette, blonde, redhead, and the four slot is usually, you know, not just a person of color, just any other, you know, just to add a variety to it. Oh, we have three white women. But they all have different haircuts and hair colors. So that's,
don't worry, they're
all
the diversity quotient is off the charts here.
Right?
Yeah.
So, all right, we got to get into this episode here. We can't. Yeah, fucking parse out what all the female representation over the course of the last 70 years in television was.
We can try.
Yeah, that's a different podcast altogether. And we are definitely qualified to talk about, but
yeah, was that the Bechdel cast?
Yeah.
Is that what they do?
Yeah. Would it be funny to have a podcast that deals with that, like women's representation in TV, but only have men talking about it?
I think it's funnier to describe than to actually.
Yeah.
Do.
Yeah. I do not want to do that, but
yeah.
The idea of that is funny. All right.
I like the Zoo Crew format for that.
Sure.
The sort of thing where you're just dancing around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Anthony from Yonkers.
We did Yonkers already.
No, we didn't.
One of the earlier callers was from Yonkers. Flushing. Say Flushing.
This is from
this is from Flushing. I'm Greg. I'll call back.
I fucked it up.
I'm not even Italian. I don't know why I'm doing this stupid fucking voice.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? This is Carmine from I was trying to think of even one town in North Dakota. Couldn't do it.
Fargo?
Yeah. Hey, this is Carmine from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. There we go.
All right.
And we'll clean that up in post.
Yeah. We're going to edit that. You guys won't even notice it.
Fargo was good, by the way. Fargoots. Yeah. little Fargoots.
It is Michelangelo from Fargoots.
Michelangelo.
Hey, this is fettuccine. Yeah, this is
I don't know. This is Enrico Tortellini, Machiavelli, whatever.
Hey, this is Ennio Marconi.
That would be an honor. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of Italian composers.
Yep.
Angelo Badalamenti and his famous Badalamenti and his famous show, Twin Peaks. This episode directed by another Nepo parent.
Uh-oh.
Stephen Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. Now, Dan.
Yeah.
Is he the father to your cats?
No. He's Daryl Gyllenhaal from Gyllenhaal and Oates.
Yeah.
He's Daryl's dad.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
He is very
and Oates' dad. Oh. Oates Gyllenhaal.
Oh wow. I didn't even know they were related.
Daryl Gyllenhaal and Oates Gyllenhaal. You got it.
Yeah, you get it. Steve Gyllenhaal, huh? I did not know that Jake and Maggie were Nepo kids.
I didn't either until I read this very IMDb page.
Oh, and just real quick, speaking of Nepo kids, not that this really counts, but Bonnie Bedelia, who, mm-hmm.
She's Amelia Bedelia's mom.
Well, yes, she's obviously Amelia Bedelia's mom. And that's how she got all those books written about her. But no, Bonnie Bedelia from Die Hard,
it's a
from
real Gone Girl situation.
Salem's Lot. Right.
Yes.
Is the aunt of the Culkin boys.
Yes, I did know that.
Holy
that
shit. Is,
isn't that something?
It is something.
This they got sick the, little town we call showbiz Hollywood.
They got that Bedelia bump.
Bedelia's sister had a bump. Or brother's wife. Sister-in-law.
Yeah.
So this episode starts with Ted Raimi in a big chess piece. He's dead. His face is in rigor mortis, frozen in like a what's that?
Yeah, face. In a very dumb face.
And he's sort of this. I found like as goofy as it is, like the sort of just like the dead weight of him like rocking back and forth toward the camera in that close up. I was like, this is good.
Yeah. No.
That I thought.
I agree.
It gives weight to some of the silliness that we're seeing here a little bit.
Definitely.
A man has died.
When the reveal at the in the last episode of him in the chess piece with the big like the stupid dead face that he has on is like silly, right? But
I'm dead.
To open the episode like this, and like you said, like with the actual weight of the thing moving, and then honestly, I felt really sad for his friend.
Yeah.
Who was like, the two of them were like, just whatever. They were roadies and they were like, we were going to move up to Seattle together and like, whatever. I don't know if he says like start a band or whatever. But he basically is like, he didn't have a good relationship with his parents and like.
Yeah, right. They're like, call the parents. He's like, no.
He didn't even like his parents. And yeah. All of that.
Yeah. And then. Carrie's closest male friend starts crying, which of course makes Andy cry.
Oh my god, yeah. And then Truman's like, Andy, come on.
I'm sorry.
Oh no.
It's
getting farther and farther. Every day I stray farther from actual Andy voice.
But yeah, I liked as silly as the chess piece is, I think this is very effective, and I feel bad for that young man who just lost his best friend.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's
Do you think it's any small coincidence that we kind of like this episode feels like a little bit of a reset and also has Andy crying much like in the pilot? We are taking people's deaths seriously again.
Yeah, I think I think you're right. I really think this episode is like kind of a turning point here. All of the, like you said, like even the Wyndham Earl stuff, which has been like goofball nonsense for the most part. I felt like even with, you know, the dumb shit that he does in here, I feel like has weight, you know?
Yeah.
He, you know, we'll get to what he does with Major Briggs and whatnot. But like all of that stuff, I was like, oh, this is actually like. Major Briggs being there kind of adds a weight to the whole scene.
Totally.
And like a reality like to it.
It really is like, oh, well, if he's taking it seriously, I should probably take it seriously. Exactly. That's well, a very serious man.
Yeah, I respect Major Briggs.
Yeah. Right. It's like the exact same magic trick as like having sitting him down and having a conversation with Bobby. And it's suddenly like Bobby, this snot-nosed shithead punk-ass stoolie.
Yep.
Like, as soon as he's given a, put in a scene with his very serious father, like, suddenly all of his emotions become real.
Right.
You know, he's like a real guy all of a sudden.
Which is amazing, because every scene with Major Briggs is a little, like, silly. The way that he talks, like, his whole, like, moral compass and whatever. But also, and the fact that he, like, disappears and reappears in certain places.
Sure.
But all of that, like, I don't know, Major Briggs, he's a serious man. And, you know,
he's a bit of a, was it Cy Abelman?
Yeah, he's a bit of a Cy Abelman. Yeah, it is amazing that, like, the actor who plays Major Briggs, whose name, of course,
Willie Garson.
Is not Willie Garson.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Major Briggs is, of course, played by Don Davis. The gravitas that he could bring to any sort of scene to like boost up whatever is going on. It's pretty amazing.
Now, something we haven't talked about with him. He is an actual military man. Like I think we kind of talked about this in terms of like you used to just like go to war and then come back and be an actor.
Yeah.
Right. I forget. That may have been on like
it was on a, what episode. Yeah, it was a different episode. I don't know if it was a Twin Peaks episode, but yeah.
This is definitely a case of that. He was in Korea during the Vietnam era. So it seems like he dodged a couple bullets there. I shouldn't say that because I don't know what was going on in Korea during Vietnam.
Yeah, but yeah, right.
Certainly not Vietnam.
Right. And it sounds like also maybe the Korean War was over.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. All right. We're both thinking it. Let's just shout out one of our favorite jokes of all time. Friend of ours, our friend Jordan, comedian. Oh. Had a great joke.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I was on the subway and this guy comes up to me and he goes, I killed 30 of you in Vietnam. Jordan is, let's say, visibly Asian.
Yeah, sure.
For lack of a better term. Uh-huh. So, yeah, he goes, guy comes up to me and he's staring at me. He says, I killed 30 of you in Vietnam. I said, that's really weird because I'm Filipino. Talk about wrong place, wrong time. Yeah. Great joke.
The first time he told that joke, I mean, it was like one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
Sure. It's, you know, I mean, it's such a rare treat to hear like an actual joke at one of those things.
Oh, totally. But like wrong place,
wrong time. Yeah.
Just that's killer.
That's like, yeah, that's a great line.
It's a great line.
Okay. So yeah. Instant gravitas with Don Davis.
Totally. All right. So back at the what we got, the sheriff's station, right? Lucy and Andy are talking. And I already thought that they had solved this problem, but Lucy is basically like, I'm going to finally make a decision about who I want to be the father of my child, right? Who I want to raise my child. Which, like, I thought we were already done with this. I thought she had already decided that Andy was the right guy for the job and that Dick Tremaine was a big piece of shit.
Right. Even as she's talking about it now, it seems like her mind is made up and she's kind of just like playing with Andy.
Yeah.
Like, right, because she's like, tomorrow I will decide whether the father of my child will be Deputy Andy or clothing retailer Richard Tremaine.
Yeah, Richard Tremaine, menswear. I think that's basically it with Andy and Lucy.
Lucy also mentions that she's giving a speech about the environment at the pageant.
Yes, that's true.
And she's like, I don't know anything about saving the environment. And Andy's like, well, I know people have to stop putting their cans in the lake.
Mm.
They're empty beer cans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, nothing really to discuss.
Right. We get it. So there's a little bit with like Donna and the Haywards and whatever, right? Donna goes up in the attic. She finds her birth certificate where, dun, 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 no father is listed on the birth certificate.
Wow. And also her, we'll call him her father for now, is giving Ben Horn an exam. And they're having a conversation, and one of the things that the good doctor says is, stay the hell away from Eileen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically,
he doesn't say stay the hell away.
Yeah. But yeah, basically, I mean, the tone of the conversation is like, you know, Doc Hayward's like, I know you want to do the right thing. I know you're trying to be good, but you're going to end up hurting more people than helping if you be good in this very narrow sense of the term.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Which is such like a, I don't know. It's interesting that this is happening to Ben as sort of like our moral compasses, you know, Dale and the good major and everybody else.
Yeah.
They're all eschewing the rules. Like people who've been committed to the rules their whole lives are now like, we can't simply abide by those rules if we're going to see the bigger picture here. So Ben is sort of like, as someone who's just sort of like weaseled and connived his way through life up to this point,
totally
found no satisfaction in doing that, and it's like, I gotta try rules now. So they're on like opposite trajectories.
Yeah, very. Yeah, that, I mean, I don't know, I feel like this, everybody, not everybody, but I guess like all the, in quotations, good people on the show, there's always this like we got to follow the rules kind of a thing, but they're always breaking the rules, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, I remember nothing from my entire education.
Of course.
From ages 5 to 21, that's a black spot for me. I just don't know what happened.
Right.
But sometimes I'll wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night, remembering learning about the chivalric code of the Middle Ages, which like people talk about chivalry. It's always in like the very like retrograde, like how to treat females kind of way.
Yes.
Females, their word, not mine. But in reality, it was like broader than that. It was like about sort of like knightly conduct, like just how to behave in society and like what sort of like values should guide you in battle, like all that kind of shit. Like, and this feels very much like that. Like they understand that the code is like something to strive for.
Right.
And is something you'll kind of always fall short of.
Yeah. Which I honestly, I think that's probably like a
very healthy disposition.
Yeah. It's a good way to look at things. Like,
yeah. And even to say fall short of, that's not even what I mean. I guess just mean like adhere to.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
You think about Dale Cooper, who is like, you know, on the straight and narrow, like, you know, abiding by all of the rules. But, you know, he crossed the border, right? He, you know, him and Truman, they went into One-Eyed Jacks to get Audrey back. He's broken rules before. The Bookhouse Boys have broken rules.
And they don't show it, but he probably caught a little strange while they were there. No. He was gambling.
He did gamble a bit, yeah.
Shame on him.
But he always, what was he always brings in a 15% profit.
Right. Yes. Yes.
I'd like to get at least a 15% return on the government's money.
Who doesn't? Who among us wouldn't like that?
Yes, that's what's going on with Ben and the Haywards. We also have Jack, Billy Zane, just looking like a fucking snack.
My God. Yeah, more like snack, more so than Jack.
Totally.
More like, never mind. I was going to use the name Jack, but I'm just, Jack Justice Wheeler.
Jack Justice Wheeler. He's been called away. I guess a friend of his has died in Brazil. So he has to go to Brazil immediately.
And what's up in Brazil?
What's the deal with Brazil?
What's the deal with Brazil? So what? Yeah. Like what are we doing here?
I don't know.
Cause there's all this, like, I don't know, man. Something's going on in Brazil.
Well, I mean, it's in a Terry Gilliam. Yeah. A lot going on in Brazil, a lot of bureaucracy,
a lot of paperwork. Yeah. No, I don't know. It's just like this all, there's so much like sort of, there's like intelligence agency stuff happening here and military stuff, like covert military stuff. And when you think of South America, you think a lot about the many Nazis who fled to South America.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. It's just like, it's too big, like having his friend be killed in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Something's going on there. Like if it were just like, we need to get him out of here.
Yeah.
His contract is up. He's too goddamn hot. He keeps burning through the celluloid.
Right.
Budgets through the roof. I don't think you go with somebody died in another country.
Yeah.
Like that. It's like, I don't know. It's like the stuff with Josie also, like everything tied back.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. So maybe we're going to find out more about what Jack Justice Wheeler is up to here.
Also, there's something suspicious about taking a biplane from Washington to Brazil. That's something you do if you don't want to get noticed. Otherwise, you'd fly on a commercial flight. In half the time.
Yeah, but he's a pilot, baby. He flies.
He is a pilot. When he's wearing the all red ensemble with the brown leather jacket.
Get out of here.
Cream.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. So Jack has to leave. He's looking around for Audrey, but Audrey is nowhere to be found. And he leaves the hotel. Shortly thereafter, Audrey shows up and she's immediately pulled away by Hawk, who has to take her down to the station. Down at the station, Cooper sits Audrey, Shelley, and Donna down and tells them about Wyndham Earl and the poem. He brought them there because they all received pieces of that poem. But he's like, listen to me very carefully. This man is very dangerous. If you're going to go out, don't go out anywhere alone, he asks if everybody, if they've, seen anybody strange, and all of them are like, yeah, there was this fucking weird, like, biker guy who left me like a really big tip. There was a guy at the library who was real strange at all this. Right. So they're, Cooper's like, you just have, all of you just really have to be careful. And like, all of these girls at one time or another have been like either, like held captive or like abducted or, some sort of thing like that. So, they should, I would think that they should all probably maybe be a little bit more aware of their surroundings to begin with. you know, Shelley was like tied up and like about to be burned down with the mill basically like 3 weeks ago. It was like last month that that happened.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
Time really flies in Twin Peaks.
Yeah. I mean, every time the Lucy stuff comes up, I'm like, how is she still? Right. Because we're doing a Jack Bauer type situation here.
Totally.
Every episode is 24 hours.
Cooper tells him that and then sort of like sends them on their way. When Audrey goes back to the hotel, Ben like immediately like pulls her in and he's like, you know what we need is like a spokesperson, like a figurehead, like the face of environmental safety and the anti development
Ghostwood.
Ghostwood, thank you. The anti-Ghostwood campaign. And he's like, I think you can do it, Audrey. And she's like, yeah, yeah, that's fine. Where's Jack?
Mm.
And he's like, oh, Jack was called away. His friend, you know, was killed and he had to fly to Brazil. And she like freaks out and then she runs out. And Pete is there at the hotel. And at first she asks the concierge if he has a car, and I don't know, like he doesn't or whatever, but Pete jumps in. He's like, I have a truck. And she's like, can you take me to the airport? So
Sure, Audrey.
Oh, sure thing, Audrey.
So hold on.
Yes.
Pete Martell claims to see Josie's face above the fireplace.
Yeah.
You want to get into that?
Sure.
Or you want to save it?
No, we could get into it.
She's just in the wood.
She's just in the wood.
She's just in all the wood.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel a little better, because like confining someone to one single drawer pull, that seems bad.
Yeah, that seems really bad.
But if you got the run of the whole hotel.
Yeah, you could just travel through all of the wood in a damn log cabin. Yes. Of a hotel.
Yes, everything's made of wood.
Everything.
It's kind of a plum gig.
Oh, Aunt Beans wants to get on mic.
Letter. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's all there really is to say about it.
Yeah, that's
it. She's around. Josie is around.
Yeah. You want to keep going or you want to take a little break?
I guess we're about due for a break. I guess when we get back, we'll find out whether or not Audrey has sex with Jack in his plane for 8 hours.
Yeah, we'll find out. But if you want to find out for sure, why don't you go ahead and head on over to patreon.com/kingmepod and sign up.
That's right.
$5 a month. You'll get 1 week for free where you could test it out. Test the waters. If you like it, you stay. If you don't, you cancel. It's easy as that.
No worries.
Every Tuesday, you'll get the other half of the bonus Twin Peaks episode. And then every other week, you get a bonus episode on Friday. Come on. It's a good deal.
All right. Come on. Let's do this. Enough bullshitting. Yeah. Enough horsing around.
Quit fucking around here, all right?
Actually, if you want some horsing around this week, you're going to have to go over to patreon.com/kingmepod. We'll be right back.